CliffCentral.com.
Yebo, CliffCentral.com on a Monday morning. It's the 21st of June, and we are speeding towards the Collectomania for this week, which is going to be very exciting. We speak to a guy called Mark Wade, who collects bayonets. This is pretty interesting. It's quite a wild thing to collect, don't you think? It's it's so specific. It's like if you collected guns or you collected knives, those seem like two good categories, but bayonets are like halfway in between. Of course, a bayonet is something that you fix to the front of a rifle and you use to stab your enemies when you've run out of bullets.
Ooh.
That's a nice thing to collect.
But his name sounds apt for someone who collects something like that. Mark Wade.
That's right.
I want him to chew tobacco and spit. And use a bayonet on someone. Sounds about right.
I went out for supper on Friday night, and this new curfew, which, I mean, listen, I hear lots and lots of people have got coronavirus now. I hear lots and lots of people in this third wave. I mean, I don't doubt for a second that it's actually happening, but it seems like the numbers of people is just, it's huge. I don't know why we're not seeing the ticker tape that they used to have last year this time about how many infections, how many deaths, how many blah, blah, blahs, but I'm hearing hospitals are full. I don't know how much of this is true, because who do you believe these days, right? Either way, the curfew came into play last week, and therefore, everything shuts down at 9, which makes it a little bit difficult. Unless you start having supper at like 5:30, it's just always a rush. And, the people who work in these places have to get home before curfew. So 9 o'clock just seems kind of ridiculous. I mean, we were at 12 o'clock a year ago. Now we're at 9. Mm-hmm. Seems a bit dumb. If you're going to go out, you're going to go out anyway, right? Shouldn't make a difference what time. Why do you think they're doing that?
It's got to do with, I believe, alcohol and alcohol-related behavior. So, when you have, when you're inebriated, you'll probably change your social distancing. There'll be a lot of hugging, maybe some kissing. You never know.
Well, I wore a mask on the plane the whole way down and the whole way back, and I just could not wait to take that thing off. I actually felt like, my skin was getting like oily and gross with that mask. I hate
those
masks.
Have you experienced having
mask me
moisture? Moisture because you've kept your mask on so long.
It's horrible.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I tried to go to church a while ago, and throughout the church service we had to keep our mask on. When it was time to pray, I spoke to Jesus, said, "Jesus, I love you and all of that, but I'm not going to ruin my skin for this. I'm going to praise you at home. I can't do that. No."
Yeah.
But I had to actually calm one of my friends down over the weekend, who, it was at about like 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. They were posting on social media going, "Wake up, everybody. Wake up. Because you have less than 12 hours to drink until curfew curfew begins." I'm like, dude, it's 9 a.m.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, really?
we are not waking up and thinking, "Oh, we have to drink now."
No, I'm not hugely motivated to do that stuff anyway at the moment. But I was just thinking that this curfew is again making it very hard for restaurants and for places of entertainment. And I know that the government think they can just arbitrarily shift these rules around, but it impacts very seriously on people's lives. And I mean, not just those of us who are going out to have supper, which is my experience of it, but those people who work in those businesses. Don't tell me it's not going to affect their income. Don't tell me it's not going to affect their ability to. Most restaurants make more money out of alcohol sales than they do out of the food. So it's really making it tough. And we're going back down the same road that we were at just over a year ago, where we see this very arbitrary, very random, very capricious decision-making from government. And I'm not going to take them seriously. I said this on social media after the president made his speech last week. I'm not going to keep repeating myself, but I've never listened to any of this crap. I don't think that they have any basis for it in science. It's totally made up. It's a knee-jerk reaction. Most of the time, they're just following what international leaders are doing. And I'm not going to take advice on my health from people who can't run the government properly, and from a minister of health, frankly, who had to step down and go and take a cooler because he's been giving digital vibes millions of rands. I'm not gonna take my health advice from those people. And if you do, you're an idiot. They're not gonna keep you safe. These people are not there to help you. They're there to help themselves, quite clearly. And the PPE scandals and all the stuff that we've uncovered since then should make it clear to anyone who thinks that government is on your side. They are not. You are not going to get any help from these people in government. They are not your friends. In fact, they're exactly
the opposite. No fitness help from people who can't run.
Correct.
The government.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
very nice. All right, a couple of things that are in the news that we need to get into this morning. Leanne found a story about a woman in Mpumalanga who turned to police after a false sex advert was created in her name. You know, you see these posters and you see these sangomas who can give like penis enlargements and whatever else it is, and there's a number on there. And I've often thought, like, what if I put my friend's number? What if I put a sticker over there just to mess with them? And I put their number under the sangoma thing, and they started getting all these calls. But this had evidently happened to a woman in Mpumalanga.
Yes, her name is Lizelle Taljaard.
Oh my God.
She's 48 years old. And she started receiving these strange calls from men who were asking about her availability.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did she?
She lives in. Yeah.
Now, what does she do at the moment? Is she a stay-at-home mom? Is she a CEO? What does she do? Do you know?
I'm not entirely sure. She lives in Urgies.
Oh.
Gareth, what's that O?
It's a tiny little town, but. You know, the reason I'm asking what she does is because if she's, for example, a beauty therapist, then if they called her for her availability, she'd think, oh, they want a facial or something.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whereas.
No, but it was the type of availability.
Oh.
So one of the first call that she got, she's got that Truecaller app on her phone. Mm. Mm-hmm. And the first call she got was identified as coming from the Khosi Mampuru prison.
Oh, nice. That's great.
Oh, so good morning,
mates. She thought to herself, I'd better answer this. I mean, you never know. And the man on the other side asked about her availability to give the service that she had allegedly advertised.
Hmm.
So she was like really upset and confused, and she ended the call. And then her phone was just flooded, texts, WhatsApps, all from men requesting sexual services.
Nice.
She received close to 50 calls and messages. So she asked some of them where they got her name and her number.
Unreal.
And they said they were responding to an ad placed online on a dating website.
Yeah.
So she immediately called her lawyer, and the lawyer made sure that the ad had been removed. They got in touch with this dating site and said, you know, I wasn't the one who placed it. And there's actually been a criminal case opened, and there'll be civil proceedings which have been lodged against the person behind this. I mean, it is defamation.
They found the person behind this?
Not entirely sure.
Because you could, anyone could do this. If you were a spiteful, mean human being and there was someone you were having an issue with, you could do this. You could actually place an ad. I know people who've done this as a joke, but they weren't being malicious. They were like, oh, my friend's trying to sell his dining room table, but he wasn't really. And then he'd get all these calls, like 20, 30 calls from people because he'd put it on Gumtree or something. And then eventually he'd be like, oh, for God's sake, I'm not selling my dining room table. And he'd find out his friends had placed it, and then they'll remove it, you know.
Yeah, it could be a jilted ex-lover.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah. I mean, this woman from Urgies is, she's probably really cross about this. But you see, you have to get a lawyer. Suddenly it becomes very serious very quickly. Now you have to get a lawyer. Mm. You have to pay the lawyer. The lawyer has to call up the dating site, threaten legal action unless they remove it. It's a pain.
Yeah,
but
crazy.
In these times, these tough economic times, and people are losing their jobs, and then you get 50 calls from one website ad alone.
Well,
I would start looking at that as a career.
People are thirsty, sir. Hey. People are really thirsty, you know. And thanks to lockdown and all the rest of it, people are hungry to get involved with other people. And if there's someone who's advertising that she has availability, some people might mm-hmm. be jumping on that.
And then,
can you imagine the shock?
How was an inmate going to book her? How was that going to work
exactly.
out?
Maybe he was getting out soon. Who knows? But imagine the shock of receiving a call from Kgosimampuru prison saying, what sexual services can you offer me? What a shock.
Oh, don't lie, Leanne. You'd be slightly excited by that. I know you. That's your thing. You're one of those women. Aren't you one of those women who writes to prisoners and, you know, you...
Oh, my word.
You try to have like these...
Yeah,
these
I'm engaged to someone on death row at the moment.
No, there we go. I knew it.
Written in the stars, isn't it?
Well,
man.
Here's a much more horrible story. And I mean, I don't doubt that the woman in Urgis has had some real suffering as a result of this, but this is absolutely horrendous. Apparently, an American student and a former Marine was found dead in Russia a couple of days after texting her mom. She sent her mom a message and said to her, "I hope I'm not being abducted." And then she turned up dead a few days later in Russia. I mean, this is just absolutely terrifying, because the in-between stuff is what we don't know. She sent her mom this message and, you know, her mom was obviously worried, couldn't get hold of her for a number of days. And then they eventually found her body. And, you know, there are sex traffickers. There are dangerous people who trade in human beings. And we hear these stories, and we've all watched Liam Neeson's movie Taken, right? But this woman, she was a former Marine, so she probably could put up a better fight than most people. And she was clearly like aware of what was going on, because she said this to her mom about, "I hope I'm not being abducted." But what do we know about the details of this? Because it's a horrifying story.
So they have been able to trace back what the beginning stages of this might have looked like. Her name's Catherine Sereau, and she was 34 years old. She had texted her mother, who lives in Mississippi, to say, "In a car with a stranger, I hope I'm not being abducted."
Wow.
After they'd found her body and it was quite grim because it was in a wooded area about 250 miles from Moscow after a massive search, they started to look back. And so the mom says she believes her daughter may have gotten into a stranger's car accidentally instead of an Uber.
Oh, no.
Because she was in a rush to get back to a clinic where a payment she'd made hadn't gone through. So she quickly got into this car, and apparently when she saw that the person wasn't driving to the clinic, but instead was driving into a forest, she panicked.
God.
And that's when she messaged her mom and said, "I hope that, you know, I haven't been abducted."
When you get into one of these Ubers, and Sia, you were driving in Ubers for a long time because you had your car accident, and you've been Ubering pretty much for the last few months. Do you always sort of check the number plate and the name? And
yeah, I would check that. I went into one of them, I would greet the person by their name.
Right.
And that almost subliminally prompts them to greet you back by your name. And if they didn't, I would just ask, because I really had no shame in it. I'd ask to confirm who's the Uber for.
Right.
And with some people, depending on when I was riding and how I felt about the situation, because I feel intuition is a real thing, some I would ask for them to prompt a code, because that's what now some drivers can do. They prompt a request from their app to yours to get a code, and then you can verify in that way.
Okay.
But it's just scary in this woman's case, because what are the chances? It seems to me that she got into this car by accident. So was this person just milling around for any type of a victim to take and drive away with? Or did he think about it on the spot, considering there was a strange girl in his car?
Well, I mean, you think, you know, we often catch Ubers in and out of suburbia where it's the only car that pulls up on the street and you know that it's yours. But in a busy city, it might be different. There may be lots of people hanging around the pavement, you know, looking at their phones and looking up for a car. I mean, that could be a little, you know, bit of information or a bit of a clue to someone who was trying to pick someone up.
Well, I remember we've done this.
Pretty scary.
We've done this series on human trafficking. We did it a couple of years ago, and I had no idea of the seriousness of this here in South Africa, because, you know, you think, oh, well, Russia, you know, Russia's a dodgy place and all the rest of it. Here we've got, I think it's the second biggest criminal activity in South Africa is human trafficking. And I've heard terrible stories, and I never know whether they're 100% true or not, but what reason do I have to doubt them? There are obviously very bad people, and they will find new and interesting ways of finding victims for their horrible crimes.
Yeah.
And you know, this is not Uber's fault. This is by no means a slight on them. I mean, they perform a really useful service. And there are lots of businesses where if you get the wrong kind of twisted criminal mind into them, then those people see an opportunity to take advantage of other people, do horrible, nefarious things. It's going to happen. You just got to be you've got to be so awake and aware these days, because obviously the threats that our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents faced, very different to the threats we face. But we've got new ones that are sometimes a little harder to spot because they've never been there before. I mean, you would never have got into a stranger's car in the 1990s. If someone said, hi, I'm here to pick you up, you'd be like, no, thank you. I didn't call you. I don't know who you are. You know, unless they had a taxi sign on the roof, you wouldn't dream of it. Now you're like hopping into strangers' cars every day and taking them wherever you need to go. And 99.9% of the time, it's perfectly okay to do that. But then there's one lunatic, one dangerous person, and it makes everybody nervous. It makes the whole thing change. Horrible.
I saw a series of TikToks where a guy pulled up at high schools, or maybe there were middle schools in America.
Mm-hmm.
And he would roll down the window to kids waiting on the pavement. And this is his channel. I mean, it's an awareness thing, an awareness drive. And he just shouts out the window, your mom sent me to pick you up. And out of the three that I saw, on two occasions, the kids just got into the car. And he's got this dash cam on, and he says to them, do you know that I don't know your mom? I'm not her friend. And you see some of them kind of panicking, and him saying, why did you get into the car without checking? And they say, because you said, my mom sent you. And just this pure trust and blind trust and belief that kids have. There was only one kid who said, I'm just going to phone my mom to check.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy was in on it with the moms and had.
I remember there was that song that I think they taught it to us at, I don't know, school, or it was in a TV show or something. Leanne's frozen, but she'll probably remember this. Don't talk to strangers or get into their car. You will be sorry.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
Oh my God.
Remember that song? They like taught us a song or something when we were at school, when we were little kids. I always thought the last thing you want to do is get in some stranger's car. So they put the fear of God into me at an early age.
Look, it's sad that we live in this world, but I'd prefer being extra careful than not. I was actually remarking about this with my flatmate last week, because we started scrolling through our chats between the two of us, and most of it comprises of sending each other live location.
Right.
Where if I'm in an Uber, as I have been a lot recently, or if we're in a place and we're not really certain, and it's just send a live location and let's see what happens.
With you, it's important to do that, because you once went for a walk through some nature reserve and got lost. So we need to.
Good point.
The Temple Gardens.
Last week I went to pick up my dry cleaning, and I was chatting to the people who work there, and we were, you know, they were very friendly people, but it was around like 25 past five, almost half past five, and the store was closing. And because we were just just friendly, one of the guys asked, oh, would you mind dropping me off at the taxi rank? Because he was going to take a taxi, but he thought, oh, well, you know, we were talking and you're driving off. And I even thought with something as innocent as that, it could turn out horribly bad. Yeah. So I had to like send her my live location and, you know, look, I'm still standing and everything was fine, but you can never be too certain.
Well, talking about like, you know, people getting into vehicles and things and going far away and dodgy people doing this. Apparently 41,000 people have signed a petition to stop Jeff Bezos from returning to Earth once he goes up in his rocket. So, you know, he's got his rocket that he's launching soon, and he's going to go up with a couple of other people. It's going to be a first space flight for him. And 41,000 people so far, and I'm sure there'll be many more, have signed a petition to stop him from coming back. So this is obviously not going to stop him, but it's hilarious that those 41,000 people took time out of their day to sign a petition to say, look, why don't you stay away? It's better if you stay away. How about that?
Why are people such shits when they want to be?
No.
So he's scheduled to leave on the 20th of July. And so 3 days after he made this announcement, you know, he announced, I think, earlier this month, mm-hmm. Specifically that he'll be traveling with his brother. So 3 days after that, there were two separate petitions that were launched to and prevent him from re-entry to Earth. And in just about 10 days, we're now standing at more than 41,000. So the first petition, these are just people who are way too fixated on his money and have an issue with that.
Yeah.
So more than 23,000 people have signed that petition titled, "Do Not Allow Jeff Bezos to Return to Earth." And then the description of the petition is, billionaires should not exist on Earth or in space, but should they decide the latter, they should stay there. And so some of the people who've signed include comments like, being let back into Earth is a privilege, not a right. And Earth don't... I'm reading it as it was typed. So this is their phrasing as well. Earth don't want people like Jeff, Bill, Elon, and other such billionaires.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And then
I love that these messages are coming from people who live in their parents' basements and are bitter and twisted and unemployed and angry and like really just very, very resentful people. And what have they ever done? How many people have they employed? What have they ever added to the world? Wow. I go into Amazon, I can find any book I want. What do you do, Karen from, you know, Glen Vista? Get over yourself.
The second petition is called Petition to Not Allow Jeff Bezos Re-entry to Earth. That was started by Jose Ortiz. And in the description, Jose says, Bezos is an evil overlord, hell-bent on global domination. And the fate of humanity is in your hands, as he makes people sign. So that has garnered more than 18,000, combining it to a 41,000 plus people.
Wow.
As if it will happen.
Just got to get to this. We got Collectomania coming up in a moment or two. But Andrew says, and this is quite a horrible story. I mean, this could be any of us, right? We left a bar the other night waiting for our Uber after a number of tequilas and other drinks. A car pulled up. We thought it was the Uber and asked the driver. He said, yes, we hopped in. Only later we were dropped off at our location did we realize that these guys were not Uber when they insisted we pay them in cash. They turned out to be two Nigerian drug dealers. We had to drive around looking for a functioning ATM to draw cash and pay them. So a 300 Rand Uber trip cost us 700 Rand. We were very lucky that they were nice guys. Yeah, that's
nice.
Yeah, that's scary. That's really scary.
But I mean, you know, also the Uber driver that I know, when I get in, they go, going to our Tambo.
Yeah.
You know, they'll say the destination.
Yeah.
So what did this guy say? Where are you going? Because I mean, if a driver said that to me, I'd be very, don't be suspicious.
Don't be suspicious. But if you got in and they said, I just want to check where exactly are we going, you know, you might not think, and especially after a few drinks, it's not like Andrew wasn't being cautious enough. He probably wasn't, but that's besides the point. There are people out there who are waiting to take advantage of you. Don't be dumb. There are obviously people with bad intentions in the world. We all know this, right? Sia constantly is terrified of the idea of the killer being out there and
just saying,
coming after him. Sia has sleepless nights.
Andrew, I'm not making light of your situation, but ending off the message saying, you know, they were nice guys, does that mean like... Mm. Were they drug dealers who just weren't having a great busy time and they thought, have a spare hour. Let's transport some people.
Lifts are good.
Did you like talk to them over the trip? Like, so how's the cocaine trade these days?
Yeah. How did you get onto?
Yeah.
How did you figure out they were drug dealers? You know, did they offer you something?
Yes.
Unbelievable. Yeah, you just got to be really careful. I mean, Gentle Inflatables says the Uber drivers at airports are also quite dodge. Well, I always think if you hire a car or if you have a driver to take you from the airport, and I've done this a number of times, especially if I've got international flights, they usually have to hold up a sign with your name on it. And it's highly unlikely that there would be, you know, 10 Garrets on signs. So I usually can find that. But I've always thought it was funny if you give someone a different name, like you use a, you know, like celebrities do when they check into hotels.
Snow White.
Yeah, you say Snow White, for example, and someone holds up a sign saying Snow White. That's funny. Or it says on the sign like Jeff Bezos, and then people are like, oh my God, Jeff Bezos is coming here.
Oh, yeah.
Then all the other people in the terminal are all excited because they think that the billionaire from Amazon is about to come in. Meanwhile, it's just you and you've got a nickname. It's great.
Or you're picking up a friend or family and you have a sign saying, welcome back from sex camp or something.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's horrible. Oh, that's terrible.
No.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Well,
but now it sounds like something I should do to someone.
Yeah.
Don't do it. We're going to get to Collector Mania in a minute or two. We're going to talk to a guy called Mark Wade, who's got bayonets. That's what he collects. And we've got plenty of space on Collector Mania for you if you've got an interesting collection of things. Everybody collects something, even if they're not aware of it. I mean, Sia didn't think he had a collection until we decided that he's definitely got a problem because he keeps receipts from like his first meal that he bought after he got a new job or the first time he filled up his new car. He keeps receipts. I mean, what a stupid thing to collect, right? But he loves it.
And he can't stop himself.
It's ludicrous. So let's turn our attention to Mark Wade, who actually collects interesting things, not like Sia. So Mark collects bayonets and, a lot of people don't even know what a bayonet is, but they date back to about the 17th century. And it's a knife, a dagger, a sword, or a spike-shaped weapon that you actually attach to the end of a rifle. And they used to issue these as a standard issue to armed military outfits in almost every country in the world for a couple of hundred years. But it's a very curious thing to collect, and Mark is with us now. So first of all, let's say hi. Hey Mark, how are you doing, man? Nice to have you on the show.
Oh, pleasure being here.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Hey man, listen, this is such an interesting thing to collect, and I see some of them on the wall behind you. Those look amazing. How many are we onto at the moment? How many of these bayonets have you got?
I have about 100. The gaps you see are in the display. Or what's stuck in the post office.
Oh, God.
I've been waiting for what?
Oh, that's irritating.
You wait for about 6 months to a year.
Oh, man. You know, I also, I obviously collect a bunch of different things. And one of the things I collect is chemical elements on the periodic table. I can't tell you how many times I have things just go missing. They're just gone. And it's because of the post office, which they keep telling us we've got to use. You know, they're so good and they're so trustworthy. They're really not. And for you, this must be so frustrating because you've spent a lot of money collecting these things. And now they're sitting in the post office. And God alone knows if you're ever going to get them, right?
Correct. Normally, to import from Canada, for example, it takes 4 days from Canada to our Tambo and anywhere between 6 months and 12 months to get to the post office.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's you say 100 that you've got there, but you've actually trimmed your collection right down because you've decided that 100 is probably about the right amount, and you can't collect forever, and you can't have a million things in your house, right?
Very true. So you get two types of collectors. You get the collector that buys any bayonet he likes, or you get the collector who focuses. I focus on Great Britain, 1888 to 1948. So just that 50-year period of bayonets.
All right, so 1888 to 1948, we've got roughly, what, the end of the Crimean War. We've got Anglo-Boer War One, or the South African War One, Two. We've got World War One, and we've got World War Two. Or have I missed something out?
Correct. You've got the Second World War, First World War, Second World War.
Okay, very.
So it's
very
a good
nice.
Period of history to look at.
All right, and what kinds of you know, bayonets are we looking at here? Are these all short little swords like this? I mean, show us some of those that you're particularly proud of, and which ones are the rarest, and which ones are the ones that are most accessible?
Okay, so generally, if you look at that collection, at the top left, you're starting with the 1888.
Wow.
On the far right, you're looking at the spike bayonet. The spike bayonet's the cheapest and the easiest to find. You're looking at about 400 grand for a bayonet. On the top left, you're looking at an 1888 three-rivet, extremely rare bayonet. The most expensive you'd find in this specific collection.
Some of them have like a leather kind of holder on them, almost like a protective pouch. What's that?
The scabbard.
Okay.
It keeps it safe from the elements. Now, you asked my most valuable. So value is specific to the collector. It doesn't have to be financially valuable. It could be valuable to you for whatever reason.
If you really wanted it, you would pay whatever it took. If you really, you know, there was one piece that you were missing from your collection, there's probably any price that you could reasonably pay that you would pay to complete the collection.
Very, very true.
Yeah.
For example, this is a King's African Rifles bayonet used by the colonial forces. It's a hooked quilla. They're extremely rare. You're looking at about 15,000 to 25,000.
Sure.
To me, it's worth that money. The next person's going to look at it and go, oh, it's a knife.
Yeah.
It's worth $100.
Sure.
I've seen you at arms fairs buying Japanese katanas.
Yeah. No.
You know what the weaponry's worth.
We've probably met before. So, yeah. I mean, I do have swords, and that's just another one of my kinds of collections. But, yeah, you know, it's to me, this is such interesting stuff because it's a topic of conversation. It makes your house interesting. It's a little obsessive for some people. I mean, they spend a huge amount of money and probably more time than they do on their kids or their families or whatever else it is. But to me, it's really interesting. And to collect something like bayonets, do you often think that you should collect the rifles as well? Or do you have some of those? Or do you because you can't expand your collection forever. I mean, you're buying the rifles, then you're buying ammo, then you're buying, you know, bags for the rifles or whatever else it is. It can go in any direction.
Well, the benefit of a bayonet, you walk into a shop, you see it, you buy it, you take it home. If you're collecting a rifle, you need to apply for the permit, the license.
Yeah.
The license needs to be renewed every 5 years or 10 years. So rifles are problematic. You do have some of the big boy collectors like Telcat, who has 800 rifles with 800 bayonets attached to them. He has a staggeringly huge, amazing collection. But he goes through the effort.
Yeah.
I'm too lazy.
Well, no, I don't think you're lazy at all looking at what you got there behind you on the wall. How do your family and friends feel about this? Do they support you with your collecting, or do they think you're a lunatic?
Okay, the trick is to choose only friends who collect. The thing with collecting, a lot of people mistake collecting a historical artifact as glorifying a specific period of history. So, for example, if you collect a German bayonet dated to World War II, it doesn't mean you're a Nazi supporter.
No, of course.
Now, your collections, the way you display, needs to reflect a historical perspective and not a glorification of war or political ideology. And as long as you stick to that, your parents and family and friends should support you on it.
Yeah, I mean, I see these shows. I see these shows where people are using like metal detectors to go over old battlefields in Europe, and they try to find things. And if they find something that's got like a Nazi emblem on it, that doesn't mean that they're suddenly a Nazi supporter or that they think, you know, that that's particularly glorious. They're collecting artifacts, and these, you know, just because a museum displays something doesn't mean it supports that idea.
Correct. Very, very correct. I have some paraphernalia which I would never put on my wall because it may offend someone. Yeah. I see it from a historical perspective. I have a beautiful history collection, but you always risk the offending a visitor or a person who visits your house randomly.
Yeah.
So you leave it off the wall, and then it's purely for your own enjoyment.
Well, I mean, these days, even, you know, displaying certain flags can get you branded as a hate speech advocate, you know. So you've got to be extremely careful about some of this stuff. Obviously, for many people, that's ridiculous. They are just collecting and displaying stuff that interests them. But obviously, some people don't have the broad understanding that this is not an endorsement of those ideas. Tell me quickly, because you started collecting, obviously, at a young age, when did you develop the interest in bayonets, and how long has that been going?
Probably from one of the last generation who served in South African Defence Force, and you were issued a bayonet in 1992, and that was my first bayonet. And then from there, I moved on to swords, and from there, I moved on to bayonets.
Did you have to give back the one that you were issued, or have you got it?
I have it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, because sometimes these...
But now you mentioned...
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, no, go
you
ahead.
You mentioned a flag. So, for example, a flag. I lowered the last flag before the democratic elections at Home Affairs. I have that flag in storage. I can never display it because people will be offended by it because they assume I glorify a relic of the past, which is not the case.
But you've got the actual one that was flying at Home Affairs.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Well, there were many Home Affairs departments, no, but I have the original one.
Yes. That's very cool. So it must be a fairly large one because they have different sizes of flags as well.
Yes, it's a big one.
Oh, that's so cool, man. Damn, I think this is amazing. All right, so you've got 100 bayonets that range between 1888 and 1948, and you've got this great display behind you. Where do you go? Because people don't know. I've been to a few of these things. You obviously know them a lot better than me. But there are arms fairs that they have, you know, kind of annually or twice a year or whatever in different parts of South Africa, and then people bring their stuff out. Do you sell as well, or do you just buy?
I tend to buy and swap.
Okay. All right.
So a lot of the rare things that I find, for example, a few months ago, I found an African core artifact, and I donated to the British Museum. They never had one. You ship it off, it'll appear in a book, and there'll be a little name tag saying donated by Mark Wade. Nice. A lot of collecting is about sharing the enjoyment of collecting.
Yeah, you don't want to just keep it for yourself. You like to
exactly.
Share it. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. So this is, of course, part of our series on collectomania. And Mark is a great example of this. He and so many of our other collectors that we've spoken to collect all these fascinating things. And we continue our weekly dose of collectomania talking to compulsive collectors. It's all brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop, where, just by the way, you can get some pretty amazing coins, which are also very collectible, and they're also a great investment. So you might want to check that out too at the Scoin Shop, S-C-O-I-N. And you can find out more about the South African Gold Coin Exchange by going to cliffcentral.com. Mark, it's a great pleasure to speak to you. Keep collecting. I love this stuff. And I love the fact that you've also given some of your bayonets to museums. I think that's amazing. I should think about that next time I want to clear out some space. Maybe I should do the same thing.
Good idea.
Yeah. No, very, very nice to see you. Thank you so much. There's Mark Wade. That is Collectomania, which is brought to you by the Scoin Shop and the South African Gold Coin Exchange. How awesome is that?
Very cool.
Yeah.
Look, I don't know if Mark has any kids or not, but I would hate to date one of his kids.
Yeah.
Because you invited into his study and he says, "What is your intention with my daughter?" And there's just tons of bayonets
exactly.
In the background.
Yeah, you're not going to mess
That's
around.
That's all I was thinking. Right. I thought, want to stay away from that.
No. So cool. Leanne, we can't hear you.
When I was young, there was some, I don't know who started it, I think it was my aunt, my dad's youngest sister.
Mm-hmm.
Because her and I were only 10 years apart. So, you know, when I was in my mid-teens, when I was 15, she was 25. So we'd go out together. And she made a joke to any prospective guy that my dad had a collection of shotguns. Now, if you've met my dad, he's totally not that person. he knows his way around on a bicycle, but that's about it. But yeah, it was always, and the rumor spread about Leanne's dad and his shotgun collection.
Deborah says that she really enjoyed when we had Jen Su on with her hats, and she thought that was cool. She loves perfumes, so she has a collection of those. Deborah collects perfumes.
Ooh.
Yeah. I remember I used to get free like colognes whenever they'd bring out something new. They'd send not always, but they'd send me some. And at some point I had an enormous collection. It was just too many. And what I did is I put them all in a box. And then every time I had friends over, I'd say, just help yourself if you want one and take it home. Because there's just no way I could have had all of them. I mean, if they were really, if there were nice ones, I'd keep them. But I mean, most of the ones that I had duplicates of or whatever, I'd just give away.
Yeah. And also they don't last forever. It's not like a bayonet.
That's true. So here's a little update we want from Rebellious Ruth is asking, Sia, have you replaced your coffee table yet? And did you get to that sale at Tom's Art over the weekend? Sia, of course, broke his coffee table.
No, I didn't get to that. I've commissioned a coffee table that I'm still waiting for that I think will just be so rajaja.
That sounds very nice. There are a couple of other comments here. Deborah says she's got 700 perfume bottles in her collection at the moment. That's amazing. And of course, some people just collect the bottles because even if the perfumes run out, the bottles are so pretty. You know, there's a whole world of like perfume bottle collectors. That's quite something.
Well, that's the thing that carries the value. The actual perfume, as soon as it's not in a nice bottle, it loses value. And we discovered this while chatting to Damon about his perfumery.
Yeah.
It's all about the bottle.
It is. You know, this is what I love about this collectomania. And there couldn't have been, if you designed something for this show and something we'd love to talk about, you couldn't have designed a better idea than this, because we get to speak to all of these really, really interesting people who have these bizarre, outlandish collections. And now, you know, Deborah could be the next one talking about her perfume bottles when we do it again next week.
Yeah.
If you know about this, email us and we will put you on the next episode of Collectomania, which is brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. And we had Rael on the other day, whose idea it was to do this. Such a good idea. Can't tell you how much I love it. All right.
So cool.
So there are a couple of other things that we still want to get to this morning. Leanne has sent me a very funny list of bands if they had Afrikaans names. And this is really funny. So
just, it is so perfect.
I'll give you the first two, and then Leanne can give you the next one. So the Pet Shop Boys, if they were Afrikaans, would be called the Troeteldier Winkelseuns. Just stupid. And the Smashing Pumpkins would be the Platgemoerde Pampoene.
That one.
I almost think that's better.
The Clash would be Die Botsing. Frankie Goes to Hollywood would be Frikkie Gaan Flik Toe.
Frikkie.
Banana Rama, and again, only South Africans would get this. Pisang Margarine.
What a funny Rama.
Yeah, Rama. Exactly. Iron Maiden would be Aster Sissy. And the Spice Girls would be the Armat Sletter.
Oh, come on. Your slit.
That's my favorite one. Meatloaf is Fleisroll. Simple Minds is Dorfkoppe.
The
Dire Straits is Murdu.
Yeah. And then Def Leppard is Stom Doof Leipert. And then the longest one is Johnny Rotten and the Sex Pistols, which is Janie Frot en die Pomp Revolvers.
You know, I could just picture someone taking the absolute piss out of these bands should they ever tour South Africa. And it's like, you know, welcome to South Africa, you know, just so that you're down with the people. Mm. Can you pronounce this for us?
Yeah. I found out over the weekend that a family friend of ours is going to be on the next season of Boer Soeke Vrou. So I'm really excited. I've never watched.
Are they the boer or the vrou?
No, they're the boer, and he's got a beautiful farm in the Free State, and I just know when all these vrouwe see his house, they're gonna fall in love. They're just gonna be desperate to get into that house and become the vrou of this boer. But it's so funny. Like my sister used to joke. Because we all kind of grew up together, and my sister and her best friend used to joke with him and say to him, "You know, we're going to come and we're going to enter Boer Soeke Vrou if you enter, and then we'll make a whole we'll make it ridiculous, you know, we'll make it stupid, we'll pretend to fight over you and all that kind of thing." And now it's actually happened. He's going on Boer Soeke Vrou, so I'm quite excited about this.
That is so fun.
I'm looking forward to watching.
I used to think the show was absolutely ridiculous. Now I go, hey. It speaks to a certain audience, and so why not?
Listen,
it works.
That show doesn't just
work. I'd be very happy to marry a boer in Die Vrystaat.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. But you have to be, you know, a problem is like a lot of the girls who enter these things, they have a fantasy in their head that they're going to marry this boer and live in this this beautiful house on a farm and kind of be the lady of the manor, so to speak. But if you're a boer vrou, you have to be able to fight a veld fire, inject a vaccine into a baby lamb. You have to be able to slaughter a chicken. You have to be able to take the kids to school in town, which is 2 hours away by car. You know, you have to be pretty rough and ready. You can't be some tart from Joburg who's just getting her nails done every Friday. You have to be up for some hard stuff as well. The funny thing is that Boer Soeke Vrou, the executive producer on that is the guy who I worked with on Idols before. His name is Herman Binge. He's a brilliant, brilliant TV man and a real he's one of those creative people who have such an appreciation for art in general and for you know, performance art, for film, for literature. He's a very smart man, a deep, thoughtful and very, very intelligent human being. And Herman came up with the idea of Boer Soeke Vrou. And it's actually been taken to Australia. They've bought the franchise in Australia, and now they've got Farmer Wants a Wife, or whatever it's called. And that came from South Africa. It's a truly original South African product that Herman and his team developed there, which is brilliant.
Farmy Wants a Sheila.
Something like that, yeah. I don't know what it's called. Apparently, it's – I mean, I've –
probably.
I heard from people who work with him that that's what's happened, is that they've actually bought the idea for Australian television, and it's very popular there because, of course, they've also got, you know, these farmers who live far out of town, and you can't very well go on Tinder if you live in a little dorp and there's no one around. Plus, you're not going to get the kind of people that you're looking for on a dating app. It's a very different set of circumstances. So what I love about Boer Soeke Vrou, my sister told me yesterday that apparently what happens is somewhere towards the end when they've narrowed it down, then they actually have like a familie braai or whatever. The whole family get together and they all, you know, assemble on the plas, and then the family gets to meet the girl. So I think we must...
On The Bachelor and Bachelorette, it's called home dates.
Right. So this is...
Home visits.
This is where I'm now trying to convince my whole family that we need to go to Willem's farm to now pretend that we're the Engelse familie that live in in Gauteng, and we're also going to check out this prospective boer vrou, and we're going to make sure we approve.
You can ask her some tough questions.
Oh yeah, we will.
Like, does she look good in Wellingtons and in high heels?
Yeah. Can you run, jump, fight, fuck, wheel a barrow, drive a truck? If she can answer yes to all of those, then she's in.
By the way, you were right. It has branched out, and it's called Farmer Wants a Wife.
There we go.
City meets country in this fun-filled Australian series. 6 lonely farmers on the road to romance choose between hundreds of prospective partners. Now, here's the interesting thing. It's even branched out to a second reality TV series called Farmer Wants a Wife. where are they now? So looking back at where the couples are, whether they're still standing and together.
Wow. Listen to this quickly. Erica says, I was a boerfrou and I loved it. I'd go back to it tomorrow despite our farm attack. I'm sorry to hear about your farm attack. But that's interesting. Annette says, my sister-in-law in Sydney is addicted to farmer wants a wife. Very nice. So Erica was actually a dairy farmer. She can milk cows and even drive a tractor. Well, well done, Erica. That's very cool. That's awesome. And Kala, Kala says, my brother-in-law got married with a lady he met on the German Bauer such ein Frau. And there are they are like Namibian celebrities. That's so cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Talking about running the family gauntlet, says Eleuthera. Yeah, trust me, you marry into our family. We check you out from top to bottom. We make sure that you're right for our family friends. Tracy says the spin-off could be Boer Suka O. But I think they did.
Wasn't there one?
I think they did. We spoke about it on the show once that there was a there was a gay farmer who was also looking for a date.
Oh, yes.
And they included, remember, they included like prospective guys who wanted to marry farmers. And I think that was in a season here in South Africa of Boer Suka O.
Look at all of these choices and options. This is the beauty of living in 2021. Next thing, we're going to have a season of The Bachelor where it's actually a polygamous marriage, not just one.
Right.
It's going to be, I'm looking for three wives.
Yeah, you've got to be open to this stuff. You never know. It's amazing. This is pretty funny. We were talking about COVID earlier, and there's a story going around that apparently in North Carolina, they said they'd offer $1 million lottery to people who would go for the vaccine, right? So you automatically enter into this lottery when you go and get your vaccination, and it apparently only increased COVID-19 vaccinations by 1%. So what a waste. Yeah. What does that tell you about these dumb incentives? If people don't want to get the thing, they don't want to get the thing. They're not going to do it for $1 million. If they don't want it, they're just not going to do it. If they do want it, they've probably already done it.
Gosh, right?
Yeah.
And the governor of North Carolina had to admit this, Roy Cooper, because, I mean, they thought it was the best idea ever. So yeah, I had to say, we're hoping over the next few days and few weeks that we will see some significant improvement in our numbers. We're trying to find everything that we can. Even keeping steady would be a positive thing. But it's like, if people don't want to do it, they don't want to do it. And it's very evident if they would not do it for $1 million. Right. Shucks.
Well, we don't have to go and record a TV show today, CS. So, you know, already this feels like a bit of a holiday today. And then we've got this whole week ahead of us. There are no public holidays, not for a little while still. So you've got to get stuck in. There's stuff to do, people to see, places to go. And we will be with you tomorrow morning, bright and early at 6 o'clock. And being Tuesday, there's always lots of cool stuff happening, including a new episode of Blind History tomorrow. So don't go away. We're going to get into that tomorrow. Yes. We will also have all the usual stuff this week, and you can get hold of us anytime you want with the email address gareth@cliffcentral.com. Tell us what you'd like to hear more of, what you'd like to hear less of. Going to be a couple of changes over the next while as we bid farewell to Sia, and he starts his new job. And some familiar faces coming back and some new people who we're going to be introducing to the show as well. So stick around for all of those changes as we start to implement them in the next couple of days. Have an excellent Monday and enjoy your winter solstice, because it's a very short day today. So if you don't get everything done, you can always just say, well, it's a very short day, you know, shortest day of the year. It's not my fault. I tried really hard. I just couldn't. There weren't enough hours of sunlight. And by the way, I know that a lot of people have been worried. Eskom have just issued a notice to say that they understand that people are very concerned that there haven't been any load shedding problems in the last week, but they are attending to the problem. So we should have load shedding again very, very soon. Just thought I'd throw that.
Don't jinx it.
No, yeah, please.
Definitely. All right, everybody. See you tomorrow. CliffCentral.com.